I thought we'd continue from where we left off last Sunday, so we'll do a quick review, mainly because it's awesome, but also I think this is, as we get closer to Shavuos, to Kabbalah Satorah, to kind of see how what we spoke about last week was the mitzvah of Krishma, and what exactly the role of the mitzvah of Krishma is, to kind of go more in depth to see how exactly the various Rishonim, the various opinions, were reached. And this is a shiur that can take hours because there are so many different proofs that are being thrown around and rayas from various gemaras and inferences, etc. We don't obviously have time for that, but I want to go through a couple of them because, again, this is it's a real immersive engagement with Talmud Torah to see really how profound and deep it is, but also how sometimes I'll get up here, I'll say, okay, the Rambam says this, the Rashba says this, the Ramban says this. Well, how do we know? Where did they get it from? And why all three of them disagree? So to go through, I guess, some of the logic and some of the svaras behind it, again, is that's what learning be'ian is, if you will. Last week we discussed there's a mitzvah of Krishma. That we know. The mitzvah of Krishma is found in the Torah. We say Krishma twice a day. However, we noted, based off the sheet of Bali Tosfos, there is no action. He thinks there's no mitzvah to Oraisa to say Krishma. So what's the mitzvah? You should every day learn, say something in the morning and at night. Either it was Liman HaTorah, or it could be, and this we saw, the Minchas Chinuch pointed out, it could be there's no prescribed mitzvah of Krishma, of these are the psukim you have to say. Rather, we have to say some sort of learning in the morning and at night, which in and of itself is a way of accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. And along came Chazal and said, no, actually, we want you to say these specific psukim, these specific parshios, although the actual institution was on a derabbanan level, it fulfills a d'oraisa. I believe the way I once heard Rabbi Yonatan Sacks say it over, I grew up in a shul, Psaic. Anyone here familiar with him? Rosh Yivin Lander is probably one of the biggest Talmid Chachamim in America. He's unbelievable. He said there are two types of mitzvahs when it comes to words. Sometimes the Torah demands that we say a specific formula, and like, for instance, Vidoy, Meiser, etc. And sometimes the Torah says, these are certain themes you have to hit upon, and you can formulate the words. For instance, you want a bench, you have to thank God for the food, thank God for the land of Israel. What exactly are the words you're going to use? So that Chazal came along and said, no, Hazanah Sakol, etc. So we have those two. So in a way, it could be that the Machlokas here comes down to, was it that the Torah said, hit upon these themes of accepting upon yourself the yoke of heaven. How you're going to do that, that's up to you. And then Chazal came along, the sages came along and said, say these psukim. Or perhaps, no, it's the Torah is telling us every day you have to say these, prescribe these specific psukim. So that was one. Maybe it's not even anything. We then saw a couple other shitas. Maybe the mitzvah d'oraisa of Krishma is just the first pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, which in a way we say would make a lot of sense because what's Krishma? It's accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. We saw another sheet that said, maybe it's the first parsha. We saw another sheet that said, no, it's the first two. Then we saw the Rambam who implies it's all three, and we'll see what goes even beyond that. So that was what we saw. So how did everyone arrive at the respective sheet? What's going on here? So that's what I want to explore today. Let's go with the first pasuk. So the Ramban, totally, when he's talking about a totally different topic, he throws in, it's only the first pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Why would that be? And the Rashba says that as well. So again, from a Mipis Svara, it makes sense, from our logic, if Krishma is about accepting upon yourself the yoke of heaven, well, how do you accept upon yourself the yoke of heaven? You say, God is one, I believe in God of Israel, etc. That's it. But what's the source? So there's actually a Gemara in Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah says, I believe it's in the fourth parak, when a child begins to talk for the first time, you teach it certain things. You teach it Torah, and that is, you say Torah Tzivalonu Moshe, Torah Moshe, and you teach it Shema. First thing you do is teach a child Shema. What is Shema? Says Rashi, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Meaning to say, you teach it, you have to teach it the Torah and teach it Tefillah. What's this Tefillah going to be? It's Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You teach it to accept upon itself the yoke of heaven. So says the Pri Chadosh, this is the source for Krishma being the raisa of only the first pasuk, because Gemara says explicitly, teach your child Shema Yisrael. The first pasuk is Shema, and that's how it accepts upon itself the yoke of heaven. Okay, makes a lot of sense. The issue is as follows: Rabbi Soloveitchik points out that Rabbi Soloveitchik points out that according to most most opinions, the first pasuk is not the only part of Krishma. And if that's true, so what are we accomplishing here? Because he says as follows. When it comes to the mitzvah of chinuch, when it comes to teaching our children how to act, which is a mitzvah possibly the oraisa for the father, maybe even for the mother, that we have to teach our children, there's a famous question that's asked. We may have touched upon this last year. Are we teaching our children because we want to habituate them in the action, or because we want to habituate them and educate them in the actual learning of the mitzvah? Here's an example. If it's just about the action, we want them to learn that there's a concept of shaking a lulav, so we can give them a palm tree, we can give them a pasul lulav, we can give them a broomstick for all you care. The point is you want to teach them to do the action. But if you say, no, chinuch is more than the action, it's about teaching them to do the mitzvah in the right, in its fullest fulfillment of the mitzvah, shouldn't they have to have a kosher lulav and esrog? It's an interesting question, and the debate goes both ways. Cesar Salvechik, I believe that the only point of chinuch is to teach them to do the mitzvah the way it should be accomplished. And if that's true, so how are all the Rishonim who disagree and think that Krishma is two parshas, three parshas, etc., how are they going to learn this Gemara? Why would the Gemara say, oh, time to educate our children, time to mechanech them, teach them Shema Yisrael, Shema Kein, Shema Chad, and that's it, if you're not fulfilling the mitzvah in its fullest way? So Rav Salvechik says, you got it all wrong. This Gemara is not talking about chinuch in general, but talking about chinuch for
little children, specifically.
But even then,
first can speak.
Okay, but teach them the whole thing.
Okay.
So that might be one approach.
You got to level up.
So it could be.
You can't teach a little kid that can barely speak.
So Yair's point, maybe you got to level up. That's a fair point. Others may make that point that it's about, and even when you teach your children, what's the age of chinuch? When you start teaching your children, so every mitzvah is different because a child's capabilities as they mature become bigger. So yes, at some point, maybe all they can say is Shema. As they get older, it would be the whole thing. So that's one approach. Says Rabbi Salvechik, no. The chinuch we're doing here is not the chinuch of Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. The chinuch we're doing here is not the chinuch of Shema, but rather it's the chinuch of Talmud Torah. The Gemara only wants to know what's the chiyuv of chinuch when it comes to Talmud Torah. How much must we teach? What's the first things we teach our kids when it comes to Talmud Torah? And the Gemara is telling us just the first pasuk of Shema. This is not about Shema. This is about learning Torah. In fact, it says if you look at the Rambam we mentioned says all three are daraisa, but he's still in the midst of Talmud Torah. Rambam says everyone has a chiyuv to learn all the time, everyone going on through all the laws of Talmud Torah, and then the Rambam says, and with our children, the first thing we should teach them is Shema Yisrael, Shema Kein Hashem Echad. So the implication seems to be that the Rambam who thinks Krishma is derisive for all three, the fact that we teach our child first Shema, and he puts it in the laws of Talmud Torah, he's saying, the Gemara is telling us, let me introduce to you, what's the chinuch of Talmud Torah? What do you teach? What's the first thing you teach them when it comes to Talmud Torah? And from a chinuch perspective, do you learn Vayikra? Do you learn Shemos? Do you learn Taharas? No, you learn Shema Yisrael, Shema Elkeinu, Hashem Echad. Any thoughts, questions, comments? Yeah.
I thought the whole idea of chinuch was to teach that you're always learning. That you should always be doing class, learning, doing.
Well, that could be broader, but not in the mitzvah we're dealing with right here.
Is there a medrash that says you should start with Vayikra?
There is, yes. I quoted it. Shai is non-up-sharing.
Right.
But still, I think that's a later stage. Okay, so according to this, we have a problem. Oh, we have a problem. So according to this, either you learn the Gemara to mitzvah in Krishma, and therefore you see Shema is for only the first pasuk, or you say no, you could say it's just the mitzvah chinuch is in Talmud Torah, and there's no indication here or help for Krishma in general. Happens is another proof the Pri Chadosh brings that says, and this we learned in Mishnah Yomi, after you bury someone, so it says, and you have a limited amount of time to say Krishma because this Zman Krishma is approaching. By the way, if that's the Raisa Derabban, might also play into this Machlokas. Okay, so the Mishnah says as follows. After you bury someone, the Avelim, you form two lines, and the Avelim walk through, right? Says the Mishnah says, if you have time to say the Pasuk Rishon of Krishma, before you get to that line, you should say it, otherwise don't say it. What's the implication there? Just the first pasuk. And that's the other proof. Because otherwise it would say, if you have time to say the whole Krishma, why it's the only first pasuk? Although it could be that once you start, you have to go, the responsibility, once you start, you have to go through the whole thing. But if you can't even get to the first pasuk, don't say it at all. But that would be other proof that the first pasuk is the Arisa. Again, because it says, if you have time to say the first pasuk, say it, otherwise don't say it. And that's just, yeah.
What is that connection?
Meaning it says, once... If you have you have a very limited amount of time because it's late in the day or late and you have to go and be menachem of, you have to go to the avelim and say, and they're going to walk through the line. That takes precedence over Krishma. But it says if you have a little bit of time between, you know, walking to where that's going to happen, and you have enough time to say the first pasuk of Krishma, say so. Well, if it's not just the first pasuk, you have to say the whole thing to fulfill your obligation, so then what are you accomplishing by saying the first pasuk? Must be that it's only the first pasuk that's important. That's when it comes to the first pasuk. There is a fascinating Pri Chadash. The Pri Chadash argues it's the first two parshas. Right, last week we discussed Rashi says only parsha number one. We're not going to get into that. It's the first, you know, just because of time. It's the first two parshas. How does he know this? So he has a couple proofs, but he has a fascinating idea. Fascinating to see because of the implications. He says as follows. The Gemara asks the following question. Why do we have the order of Krishma in the way that we do? We say Shema, then we say Vahayayim Shemoa, and then we say Vayomer. What's the point of that order? So the Gemara says, first you accept upon yourself the yoke of heaven, then you accept upon yourself the yoke of the mitzvos, and then we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, that's what it says. Says the Pri Chedesh, 1 minute. If you tell me that only the first paragraph is the Oraisa, so that I don't need some fancy idea, we want to accept upon ourselves the yoke of heaven, and they'll accept upon ourselves the yoke of mitzvos. No, it's very simple. Fulfill your d'oraisa, your biblical obligation, first. That's why it's written, that's why it comes first. Afterwards, we'll fulfill the rabbinics. Meaning, in the hierarchy of things, what is more important? The d'oraisas. Then the rabbanans. So, fulfill your d'oraisa, fulfill what's biblically mandated. Afterwards, you can fulfill what's rabbinically ordained. Give me a second. So he says it's very simple. It must be from the fact that Gemara doesn't say that. And rather, Gemara has to give a fancy razzle-dazzle. Oh, we're saying Krishma because we want to accept upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. Then we're saying this to accept upon ourselves the yoke of mitzvos. It must be that we're all talking about in the world of the orisas. That's what he says.
Yeah, but even if that was true, you still need the Gemara because you still need to know what order the second and third bar.
So you could say the same thing there as well. You could say the same thing there as well. But either way, let's just...
But you're saying both of those.
Just say the latter two. But he's making a massive assumption. What's the assumption he's making? That when there's a hierarchy between the Oraisas and the Rabbanans. That there's a hierarchy between when it comes to things that are biblical versus things that are rabbinic. The Shagas Aryeh is an interesting sefer. It's considered a Shalos and Shuv as a question-answer sefer. The only thing is the Shagas Aryeh asked himself the questions and answered them. Makes it easy when you don't, you know, all the answers. But he asks his own questions. So it's written like, is Krishma d'oraisa? Like, no one's writing that to a rabbi. He wrote that, is Krishma d'oraisa? So in a very long essay, he argues and says, when it comes to d'rabbanans and d'oraisas, we don't put this hierarchy in place. That only when you have when there's things on the same level, both a d'rabbanan or both a d'oraisa, then we can start saying, so which one comes first? But when it's d'oraisa d'rabbanan, we're not working with those rules. And what's his proof for this? He says, because there's a machlokas beis Shammai beis Hillel, Friday night, we say the bracha of wine, and then we say the bracha of kedushas hayom, of kiddush. Well, kiddush is d'oraisa. The wine is only d'rabbanan. Surely the kiddush should come first, and then the wine. So the Shakasari, the reason it doesn't come first is because when we work within Darabana and Daraisas, we're not going to start saying, oh, Daraisa always comes first. That's not a value at that point. Interesting idea, no?
That's not count like the event in the Daraisa was coming to that implication is that Daraisas are more important than Darabanas.
But when it comes to clash, first of all, even within that, it's unclear if Safek D'oraisa L'chumra is not that biblically ordained. It could be that's only Rabbanan. It's not Lucas, Rambam, Rabbit, and a lot of other people. But I think what he's driving it is... Okay, you're right. So it comes along with Tzlach. Anyone know who the Tzlach is? Tzlach was Rechezkel Landau, otherwise known as the Noda B'Yehuda. Tzlach is safer on the Gemara. Tzil Nefesh Chaya. It was in memory of his mother Chaya. So that's what he called it. So he says, with all due respect, Rav Shagas Aryeh, no. He's a Dr. Elliot saying over here. When it comes to the Rabbanans and the Raisas always take precedent. Not the Rabbanans. This is what he said, because what emerges is an amazing Chiddush. Why is it then? The Shagas Aryeh said, if you think that his proof was, on Friday night, we make Kiddush, we say Darabanan first, then we say Daraisa. It should be the other way around. What does he say? What happens in Shul? During davening, we make Kiddush effectively. We say Vayechulu. We bring in Shabbos. So because in Shul, we already make quote-unquote Kiddush, we fulfill our biblical obligation in Shul, not with a cup of wine, but just through Shmona Esrei, of saying now it's Shabbos. So we level the playing field, because now when we get home, everything's Derabanan. Making a bracha is Derabanan. And making Kiddush, once we get home, is Derabanan already, because we already fulfilled the Oraisa obligation, the biblical obligation, through reciting the Shmona Esrei. And within Shmona Esrei, we touch on the themes of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we touch on the themes of Kiddush in and of itself. So Shagas Aryeh says, so the Noda Yehuda says, with all due respect, Rabbi Shagas Aryeh, your proof is no good. Because you can't bring a proof from Kiddush, because Kiddush is all Derabanan by the time we get home. And therefore, in the event that we would have a clash of Derabanan and Daraisa, Daraisa always come first, thus the Pre-Chadosh is correct. Give me 1 second. He goes, what emerges is a tremendous Kiddush. Think about this. He says, let's say you come home and your wife didn't daven Ma'ariv. Your wife didn't daven Ma'ariv. So now what she's facing is a biblical obligation to make Kiddush. And he says, in that scenario, if the woman was making Kiddush or someone was making Kiddush and hadn't daven Ma'ariv, we'd have to flip the Kiddush and make Kiddush first and Hagafen afterwards. That's a Kiddush. That's what he thinks. It's a Kiddush, no?
Why don't we do it?
We don't do it.
If the woman's obligated their rights to say Kiddush, then why isn't it a Kiddush?
Meaning it's a Kiddush to say that he's going to take this so far that he really thinks you should flip it. Everyone holds a Beis Shammai in this case. It's an awesome Kiddush, but that's what he says. But
he's just saying that the rights come before the woman.
He is saying that.
Right. So, but again, so
the question is, sometimes you can have a svara, but then start applying a place. You start seeing how it really can change halacha l'maisa. We don't pass in this way. But what emerges from here now is we've just, according to the Pre-Chadosh, he has a proof. Why? What's his proof? That Krishma, the first two paragraphs are d'oraisa, and because otherwise you wouldn't need a fancy razzle-dazzle explanation from the Gemara to say why Krishma, the sequence of Krishma, because it's all in there. Okay, let's do one more. Comes along the Rambam. The Rambam says all three are d'oraisa. Here's the problem. The Rambam also says that in one place, Suffolk Kara Krishma, if you don't know if you said Krishma, go back and say recite Krishma, right? As you just said, Suffolk the Rice of the Chumra, whenever you're in doubt on a biblical thing, you go back and repeat it. The issue is, the Rambam says, Suffolk Kara Krishma, you don't know if you said Krishma, so it makes sense you'd say, go back and say Krishma. He says, go back and make Krishma with the brachas. Now that's a problem, because we know brachas are only Durabbanan. Brachas are only Durabbanan. In general, and look anywhere else in the Rambam, whenever the Rambam says, Suffolk do something, he doesn't say make the bracha, because Suffolk Darabbanan Lahakel, more than that, one can even argue a bracha is a Suffolk bracha levatala, it's taking God's name in vain, which is Daraisa. So why in the world, if you look in Tehillah Sittas, Nechah Mezuzah, I believe, all these places, the Rambam says, don't make the bracha again, just do the action again, but suddenly when it comes to Krishma, he says, do Krishma with the brachas. It's pretty intense, no?
I mean, unless you hold the brachas are part of the mitzvah itself.
So the Kesef Mishnah points out, something to Yair saying, although I need to know why, that it must be that the tikkana, the gezerah, when Chazal said you say Krishma again, you say it includes with the brachas, that somehow they baked into Krishma, they built into the tikkana, Krishma, the brachas are an integral part of Krishma, so much so that we say Suffolk, you don't know if you said Krishma, go back and say it with the brachas, despite the fact that it's a bracha levatala, despite the fact, generally we say Suffolk brachas lahakim. That's a very interesting point. Why would that be? Why would it be that out of all the other places in the Mishnah Torah, when the Rambam says, Suffolk, do this, only do the action, don't do the brachas, but when it comes to Krishma, with the brachas, what's unique about the brachas of Krishma? So the Kesef Mishnah leaves it at, it must be it's part of the takana. You look at the Mishnah Berurah, he says, must be it's part of the takana. But I want to know why. So I had the following chiddush. I went to Rabbi Sachs, I saw him 2 weeks ago, I was there for Shabbos, I told him what I thought, he told me he wrote it in the Sefer already, so I can't get credit. There's something unique about the brachas of Krishma, different than any other, than all other brachas. And it's as follows. What is the point, we said, what is the point of Krishma? Krishma is Kabbal Samach HaShemayim, right? We brought a raya from Rav Chaim last week. Rav Chaim Salavitchik said, why does the Rambam not count the mitzvah of Zechira, Yetzias Mitzrayim? Mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim is a separate mitzvah, is an independent mitzvah. And he said, because Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about recognizing God took us out of Mitzrayim, therefore accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. So he says the Rambam does in fact count the mitzvah of Zichir Yetzias Mitzrayim every day. It's part of the mitzvah of Krishma. Krishma is accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. If you think about it for a moment, what does that mean? That means we acknowledge God created the world. That means we acknowledge God gave us the Torah and God commanded us with the Torah. What is the brachas of Krishma? Yotzer Arvar Echoshech, God created the world. Ahava Rabba, God gave us the Torah. Brachos of Krishma are all basically, essentially, another a continuation of accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. That really the brachos of Krishma, just like Krishma, it's the same goal. It's the same goal, and therefore because it's the same goal, we say it's part of the same takana. So if you don't know if you said Krishma, go back and say Krishma with the brachos. So this is all good and well, except one thing, Hashkivenu. Right? Hashkivenu, we basically say, we're praying to God, say, save us from the terrors of the night. Where is the accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven there? So this point, I said to Ray Sachs, perhaps one can say as follows. The Rambam points out that although we have Birchas Krishma, we have this man of Krishma, we're supposed to say Krishma at night. In the event we didn't say Krishma and it comes to Amud HaShachar, the sun starts to come up, the first day dawn begins, he says we can say Krishma with the brachas for night, but leave out Hashkivenu because it's no longer night. So I said to Rabbi Sachs, perhaps, this is a Chiddush, my Chiddush, perhaps the Rambam is telling it, is Hashkivenu is different. All the brachas of Krishma, that's all about accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven, and therefore, in the event we don't know if we said Krishma, go back and say Krishma with the brachas, which are also the same goal, the same intention of accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. But maybe the Rambam would say, Hashkivenu, don't say. Why? Because Hashkivenu is not like the other brachas of Krishma. Hashkivenu is just a bracha about the night we happen to situate and put it there. And therefore, in the event it's not night, you don't say it. And therefore, maybe my chiddush would be, the Rambam will also tell us, Savikara Krishma, go back and say the brachas except for Hashkivenu. But what emerges from here is this third shita, is not only are all three parshas are daraisa, but part of that takana is all three parshas are daraisa, but also the brachas of Krishma are daraisa because they have the same goal, and therefore Savikara Krishma, go back and say it with the brachas. Just a quick review, we saw today Shitas Tosfos, which says, well, at least Tosfos in multiple places in Shas, Menachas Sota, few places in Shas, I think brachas as well. Krishma is derabanan, as in the actual takana, to say Krishma is derabanan, but through it we fulfill a d'oraisa of accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. We saw the shita of the Rashba, the Ramban, just the first pasuk is d'oraisa, right? We saw proofs as well from the Gemara in Sukkah, where Salvechik didn't like that. We saw proofs perhaps the Gemara in Brachos about someone who's at a funeral. And then we have this amazing, we had this Pre-Chadosh, it says just the first two parashos of Daraisa. His proof was, the Gemara said, had to give us a reason for the order. We wouldn't need a reason if one was Daraisa, one was Darabanan. Shagazari disagreed and said, no, you still need it because when it comes to Darabanan and Daraisa, we don't have this equation. And then we saw the Slachos, and we do have it, which had a fascinating Chiddush when it came to Hagafen on Friday night, or Yom Tov, perhaps. And then we saw the Rambam, which says, Savakar Krishma includes the Brachos as well because we want to say, that the brachas of Krishma have the same goal as Krishma, and that's accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. I wish you all a wonderful week.